Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Information Blocking Workgroup Number 1 meeting on relevant statutory terms and provisions. Thank you for joining us. I will officially call the meeting to order, starting with the roll call. Andrew Chescott is not here. Michael Adcock?
Here.
Cheryl Turney? John Kansky?
Here.
Jenny Malcolm?
Sorry.
Is that Danny? Okay, Cynthia Fisher?
Present.
Great, thanks everybody. And so now I'll turn it over to your chair, Michael Adcock.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you again for all being here. I know that Andy sent me a message earlier, said he was going to be a little bit late to this one, but that obviously doesn't slow us down. We've got lots to talk about. The goal for today, we're going to start with practices that may implicate the information blocking provision, then move on to parties affected by, and then the primary focus, hopefully we'll be able to get through a lot of this today, is to narrow and revise the draft recommendations. Mark has a lot of that recommendations to put together and put into a slide deck by late tomorrow evening, so that we can have them out by Saturday. As you all know, we're quickly approaching our deadline and quickly approaching the in-person meeting, so we'll go ahead and get started. Unless someone has something they want to bring up from the last meeting, we'll go ahead and start with practices and then hopefully have some discussion on that and then parties and move on to the draft recommendations. All right, Mark, I see you pulled your screen over. We can go ahead and get that pulled up. I know John said he had some comments prepared for practices, so we'll go ahead and open that part up for discussion.
Thanks. This is John. So what I did, and tell me if this is hopefully consistent with the intent of what we're trying to discuss today, I went back to the preamble, pages 364 through, I don't know, about 370, where the examples are listed. We talked about some of those on previous calls, and I had the chance to go through those in more detail. Comments in general, I think they're reasonable in their intent, and I have some specific examples I want to focus on that were offered in the preamble. I think they're all fair in their intent. I wanted to make the general comment that I think the subjectivity that's implied in a lot of the examples and terminology in the preamble is going to create a lot of need for adjudication and possibly litigation that, to me, in my view, is undesirable for regulation. So to the extent that, whether it be definitions we discussed on previous calls or clarifying examples, I think subjectivity is going to be bad for those who are trying to comply with the regulation and those who are going to try to enforce the regulation. So let me stop to take a breath there.
This is Mark. I think that's great, and I look forward to hearing about kind of your thoughts on the examples. I just want to, for the group, I'm sure when you read it, you understood this, but I just want to be very clear once again that the intent of these examples was to provide kind of not an exhaustive list, but just, relevant examples when the information blocking provision would be implicated. And we say a number of times that to implicate the information blocking provision does not necessarily equate to violating the information blocking provision, meaning something could be required by law or covered by an exception. So I just wanted to add that disclaimer as we jump into this conversation.
No, and I think this is Michael. I think that's understood. John, did you have some specific concerns or things that we might want to address, whether it's in definitions or other areas that we might want to put forward as recommendations or thoughts?
Wonder if he cut out or is on mute, one or the other.
I was glad it wasn't me. I thought maybe I had cut out.
No, I'm still here. I hear you. John, are you there? Yeah.
Huh? It looks like he got disconnected.
Okay. Cynthia, did you have any thoughts on this area? Maybe everyone got disconnected with us.
Maybe. Could be a short call. You want to hold here, Michael, for a minute and just let him jump back on?
Yeah, let's, and maybe Cynthia as well. I'm not sure.
I'm here.
Okay, good. I thought maybe we lost you with John.
I'm sorry, did you ask a question?
Yeah, I was just curious if you had any thoughts. I know that John brought up some concerns about subjectivity of the examples. I didn't know if you had any thoughts on this area other than I know you put some down in the document. I can see those.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, John. I got dropped in. John can't get back.
Okay, go ahead, Cynthia.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last person.
That was John. Cynthia, you can go ahead with your comments.
Yeah, I have my comments in the recommendations that were highlighted. So unless people see them, I don't know if you can see them. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So that pretty much says it, what my comments are to it. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you taking the time to put them in. John, I don't know if you were able to hear my question or not, but I was wondering any examples of things that we need to change or look at in other work groups.
Sure. So in terms of my initial comment just about the subjective, and Mark, thank you for your comments earlier about that I dropped off right after I heard. Absolutely, the preamble was extremely helpful. The examples were helpful, and the word could constitute information blocking was prominently displayed. But in adjudicating whether those will or not be information blocking, like on page 366, there's a couple of examples that included the words like implausible reasons and a couple other things that were obviously going to be in the eye of the beholder. It's sort of period. Going on to some specific examples, if it's helpful, of specific examples of examples. On page 365, there's four examples that were given. We spent a little bit of time on a previous call, and I went back and I read those. And I think 1, 2, and 3 are all absolutely reasonable. Even the one I focused on about HINs, I think the word transmitting in that example maybe possibly should be retransmitting to be a little clearer. On example 4 on 365, there's what I wrote is that if there's a way that doesn't require disclosing proprietary information, for example, an API, but that the registry in the example doesn't have API capability, does that constitute information blocking? So the example that they give is that a registry wants to connect in a specific way, I believe it was a certified in that way. Well, what if they're proposing a different way that doesn't require them to disclose what they feel as proprietary? Wouldn't that be reasonable? That's an example.
And Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't we cover some of that yesterday under being able to look for alternatives in another work. I know it wasn't in this work group, but in another work group, we talk about, you know, alternative means of that communication.
Yeah. So, and just cut out for a minute. So I'm not sure I caught the full scope of the example. What page was that you were looking at?
There were four bolded examples that began on, I believe, page 365. And it's the fourth one that I'm referring to where it uses an example of a registry.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here, maybe I'll, just for clarity, I'll read it. I have it out right here. I'll read it out and then I'll kind of say my piece. So I think the one you're talking about is an EHR developer sues to prevent a clinical data registry from providing interfaces to physicians who use the developer's EHR technology and wish to submit EHI to the registry. The EHR developer claims that the registry is infringing the developer's copyright in its database because the interface incorporates data mapping that references the table headings and rows of the EHR database in which the EHI is stored, right?
Right, that's the one. So the point I'm trying to make is if the registry is saying, if the EHR vendor or the technology vendor is saying, wait a minute, you're forcing us to expose proprietary information or IP that we want to protect, but we're happy to do this via a different method that, like API or whatever, that doesn't require us to disclose that information, but the registry is saying, yeah, but we want to do it this way, that doesn't quite seem fair.
Yeah, and no, I hear you on that. I guess what I would say is if definitely open. If you have suggestions on ways to make the example clearer, you know, please whenever you have a chance, put them into the Google Doc. You know, with this one and with everyone, you know, it's kind of tricky, right, with information blocking because everything is going to be very fact specific and based on the specific circumstances in a case. So we tried to provide kind of general framework of examples that kind of show the direction we're going in and the types of situations that we find are problematic. With this one, you know, I think if we followed it through, like, you know, say that the situation actually happened and we followed it through to the exception analysis, I think, you know, one of the exceptions that might be looked at was whether, you know, a reasonable and non-discriminatory license was offered to use the technology or the interface or something like that, or whether it was infeasible, the request that was being made. So there are some exceptions that you know, might apply. I'm not trying to analyze this specific fact pattern, but I guess that's kind of what we were thinking. But again, if the example isn't clear, definitely feel free to provide edits.
So if I could add, I think the examples are extremely helpful. They certainly helped me. And I think that's why I opened with the comment that I did. I think what it points to is, you know, what you're saying is each case is going to need to be sort of adjudicated on its set of circumstances. And it may be covered elsewhere in the preamble, but I'm just trying to extrapolate the who will do that and what is the how many it just seems to invite a tremendous workload and burden on both sides of the equation of adjudicating all these is it or isn't it info blocking.
So I guess it's a little bit outside the scope of this work group, but I'm happy to give background to you all real quickly on that process. So basically, 21st Century Cures Act gives enforcement authority to the HHS Office of the Inspector General. So we're working very closely with the OIG down the road. Right now, you know, we're still receiving complaints of information blocking on an ongoing basis and working to implement our processes. But, you know, I can't speak to the staff that's going to be required or you know, it'll depend on you know, the types of and scope of a number of complaints we get. But I agree with you that it is going to be a lot of work and it is going to be very detailed and complex a lot of times, which is why OIG and ONT are going to work hand in hand to make sure that the, you know, the subject matter expertise is available for these types of, you know, complex cases.
And then I had a couple more comments related to other examples, but I want to give others a chance to have some airtime.
No, I think that's fine, John. Go ahead, because Cynthia put her comments into the Google Doc, so she has listed several comments.
Okay, I think these are pretty quick. Page 366, there's a brief paragraph and then what I'm considering the fifth bullet after the prior four. I just wanted to make a comment about there's clearly federal laws giving companies the right to protect their intellectual property. And I'm not a lawyer, but my comment on that particular bullet was that we need to allow companies to protect their IP without information blocking, if that makes sense.
Oh, no, that makes perfect sense. And that was what we had in mind when we drafted there's an exception for licensing on reasonable and non-discriminatory terms. So basically it's saying that if you have an interoperability element, meaning some means of sharing that's necessary for the sharing of electronic health information, you have to offer that interoperability element to license or use on reasonable and non-discriminatory terms. And we go through kind of the interaction that would be necessary. And we have innovation and IP rights in mind, but you know your concerns are definitely legitimate, and I'd encourage you maybe to take a look at that exception to make sure we covered everything as far as IP goes if you have concerns.
Thanks. And then almost done is two bullets later, which I'm considering 7 and 8. Those are the I guess second and third bullets on page 367. They both sounded like nasty anti-innovation things that a company might do, but I was just posing the question, are they information blocking? If you want to read both those examples, sound like, oh yeah, that's kind of crappy. I hope companies would refrain from doing that. But I'm asking the group, is it information blocking, question mark?
Here, I'm going to pull, for those on looking at my screen, I'll pull over those examples that you're talking about for clarity.
That's exactly what I was about to ask. Thank you.
There you go. I think it's these two that John's talking about right here.
Begins with an EHR developer ostensibly, and then the other one, a provider notifies its EHR developer. I'm not saying they're not information blocking. I'm saying, those examples take me to a broader place than I was before I read them.
And maybe I'm a little too broad on my thoughts of information blocking. They certainly seem like information blocking to me.
Yes, I agree. This is Cynthia. I think, you know, when you look at the language about the developer will provide only the EHI in PDF format. I mean, we all know that the technology industry is best served to have everything in a machine readable format and the patient records themselves. So I think Andy said it well the other day. Things need to be in human and machine readable format to deliver timely ability for interoperability and exchange. So otherwise, you're really looking at clever blocking mechanisms.
And then I see your point and respect the opinion. I guess what I was keying on in that last example of the EHR developer switching systems is that it seems very indirect to the intent of the infra-blocking legislation, meaning we're trying to make sure the data can be exchanged between actors and between actors and patients. And this seemed to be a business transaction between a technology vendor and a provider, but I see your point.
And just as, go ahead, Cynthia. Sorry.
If patients are best served, you know, we're going to have the world of open APIs and the ability for that interchange to work as seamlessly as banking does in a transactionary way today. So I think we just need to support optimization the way we live the rest of the world in our mobile society, in the benefit of the patient and physicians that can't get access to our patient information in trying to provide and diagnose care.
And John,
I agree. Go ahead.
Now, this is Michael again. The only thing I would add, if the last sentence in there wasn't that it could and does produce the data in a commercially reasonable format. If it couldn't and didn't, then we might be talking about something different. But if they're already doing it, it just seems like a way to keep the provider from being able to have information that they need to assist patients. To me, that's.
I'll get off of this one. The only thing I would, the last thing I would add is that Cynthia's point, which is valid, I would say if the current EHR vendor and the future EHR vendor are both implementing APIs, then I think there's a version of what Cynthia's suggesting would be achieved. I get your point. I'll get off of it.
And I just wanted to jump in with a point of background. You know, and a lot of these examples are based off of stakeholder feedback we've heard for years, and this is a kind of a prime example of holding up data because, you know, a developer doesn't want a provider to be able to export it and move it. So this, just to emphasize what Michael said, that last clause is really important, that they have the capability to do this and they're already doing it. So if they didn't, then they would probably look at an exception, maybe infeasibility, something like that, to determine whether they're covered or not.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay, are there any other comments? Has anybody joined that wasn't on before? Are there any other comments on the practices portion of this? I'm sorry, Sam.
You know, I just think also as we look at open APIs and we look at how we manage the rest of our lives, you know, we are in this moment of time to be able to deliver on real price transparency across the system. So to that end, it's really to have the broadness as we approach this. And I think, you know, as we look as a team at the entire proposal on information blocking, you know, as a consumer, as a patient, as a caregiver, you know, we see that, and as physicians trying to get access to be better doctors, you know, we see that the patient's both physical health and financial health are impacted by care decisions. So it's the whole spectrum, and you know, medical debt and financial duress also circles back and impacts health, right? So I think it's ever more important too that as we look at these definitions, we keep that in mind about letting us be able to allow for the open API architectures to allow for the Uberization of healthcare. That wherever we are, wherever we go, as we manage the rest of our lives, that push and pull to the consumer, that our definitions and who is accountable in the exchanges and in the networks includes everybody who's transacting, financially benefiting from the care provided to that patient and has those contract negotiated terms throughout that system so that care decisions such as insulin regimen when new drugs cost five times the amount of an old regimen and can desperately put a patient in duress financially, which causes blood sugar to go up, right? We all know the relationship there. I mean, if you look at the impact, I think we behoove ourselves to make sure that the net is cast wide enough and our terms are broad enough that we can allow technology to deliver the best quality of care at the lowest possible price and choices and fairness in the system.
No, I hear what you're saying for sure, Cynthia. Did we have any, I noticed that all these are as appropriate comments above the line. Were there any solid recommendation other than just comments that we wanted to make in this section?
And you don't need to have them now. Like I was talking to some of you before the call. If you come up with ideas for recommendations, just I'd ask that you maybe input them into the Google Doc between now and COB tomorrow would be helpful.
Okay, we can certainly do that. And if there's, I'll say this to the ones that put comments above, and I'm sure Andy will do this as well. If there's things, you know, above the line that you want to be below the line, certainly feel free just to copy those and put them below. If there's no more discussion on practices, we will move on to parties. Any more on practices? Hearing none, if you'll scroll a little bit, Mark.
Yep, I'm on it. Here we go.
Okay, so I know that there were a lot of comments on this one as well, and I would like to open the floor up to anyone that would like to discuss the term actors. I know that before there's been discussion about actors being broad. There was discussion about actors not including payers. How do we want to include them? Make sure that we're not being restrictive. And then we had a recommendation at the very bottom. I don't know if that was a recommendation that we had worked through as a group. It may have been on a call that I missed, but I just opened the floor up for discussion.
This is John. I may have missed the previous discussion or comments on payers being actors or not being actors. Given that the definition that has cast of HIE and, okay, so let me start that sentence over again. We talked about on an earlier call that as written, the definition of HIE and HIN seems so broad as all providers would also be health information exchanges, for example. Has anyone checked the hypothesis that a payer would also be a health information exchange or health information network? Question mark.
So, I'm sorry, this is Cynthia. Is that question about whether payers would be actors?
John, if
essentially.
And,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
John, did I hear you agree that they should be encouraged, that they should be considered as actors?
Well, I don't know why we would want to, why we wouldn't want to include them as actors.
I 100% agree with you, John. And I'm just editing now into my comment is that we need to include payers as actors and keep a very broad definition of the actors to include anyone who has contract negotiated terms or financially benefits from the healthcare transaction for the patient to be inclusive. So that would be providers, payers, it would be all the middle players as well. That would be your pharmacy benefit managers, your GPOs, your brokers, all along the food chain or the supply chain of healthcare, all the middle players engaged in delivery of care that benefit financially from the patient's transaction.
And just,
I agree.
I think this is a great conversation. I just want to kind of steer it in the right direction. So as far as actors go, that's what Cures says, you know, providers, developers, exchanges, and networks. As far as payers and other groups, I think it's helpful for the conversation if you can, if you think that they are a group that should be included, instead of saying that they would be an actor, trying to decide how they would fit into the already identified definitions of actors, whether it's an exchange, a network, whatever. Because we have to work within the four actors that Cures laid out. Does that make sense?
Yes. Is that Mark?
Yes, that's Mark.
Okay.
Yep.
Mark, it's Sophia. So along that line, this sort of brings up the conversation we had yesterday, which is when, you know, Cures Act wrote about networks and exchanges, it was those players that engaged in networking and exchanging, the exchanging of health information. And so that does include the broad list of players, actors in the supply chain. So I believe if we stick with the broad definition of networks and exchanges, it includes everyone in the supply chain of delivery of healthcare as players and actors.
Sure.
And then we can get to this new world of empowering consumer-driven care.
Sure, I think those are great points. I think all I was trying to say, really, I think that all makes a lot of sense, that if that's the position the group takes, it might be better to house those recommendations under network and exchange as opposed to where we are now, which is kind of this broad discussion about actors, because it would be more specific. I think what you're saying, if I'm understanding, is that you think networks and exchanges should be very broad and inclusive of groups like plans and payers. So I think that would be recommendations to be included for that specific category.
Yes, although perhaps we should give examples of the participants in the supply chain that financially transact and name them and list them and not that it includes but not exclusive of, you know, that it is a broad definition of network exchange of those participating, but it's inclusive of payers and providers and the middle players of the supply chain. PBM, blah, 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 you know. So you get at the whole thing, but you can list them out and say inclusive of but not limited to.
This is John reacting to Cynthia's suggestion. Mark, is just like there's examples that we just went through of practices that might constitute information blocking, are there examples elsewhere in the preamble of, so here's an organization that might meet the definition of fill in the blank, and if not, is there an opportunity to introduce that in future guidance documents?
Yeah, so they're definitely not as substantive of a list of examples. I'd have to look at the preamble, go back to that to remember if we put examples. But I will say specifically with regard to networks and exchanges, we tried to focus on providing a functional definition. So you would look at the actual words in our definition and start from there, I think would be a good way to look at it and say, is this definition provided by ONC? If I read it, if I'm a normal person reading it, does it cover these specific groups that you're talking about? As far as like putting examples in, that's definitely something we can do in preamble, but generally you don't put examples in reg text because reg text is supposed to be pretty much exhaustive language. So you're not supposed to put in there includes but not limited to example types of situations.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting adding anything to the reg text. I guess I'm suggesting either preamble or future guidance documents that come out. The only thing I want to observe is that I don't think we sort of debated this a little bit on an earlier call. I don't think there's general agreement on whether the definitions of actors should be very broad and fuzzy or made more precise.
And as you point out, we're kind of given the actors that we have, and we can't create new actors. The only thing I would point out is that taking the functional approach to the definition is going to, in my opinion, cause fuzziness that's going to create unhelpful confusion to organizations figuring out if they're actors or not. So if there were an opportunity to say, here's a dozen examples of organizations that meet the definition of this type of actor or that one, and here's five examples of organizations that are no kind of an actor, I think I personally would find that very helpful.
I agree with that, that we, if we can do, you know, there's nothing to restrict us from identifying what it can include, what we know today, and not limit it to. And I think if you link the actors to having a financial vested interest in the healthcare transaction of the supply chain, because they are sharing that information about the patient through the supply chain, because they're all accounting for their own financial portion of that provision of care, they are actors.
So given that there's dead air, I'm just going to point out, and I think this is slightly off topic, but we can come right back. Given this approach, broad approach that we're taking with the definition of actor, when you look at the definition of access, which requires connection to all source systems, overlaying that with the broad definition of EPHI, that implies that a tremendous number of organizations are going to have a very costly, complex, and burdensome time connecting all kinds of source systems in all kinds of ways to meet this regulation. And while we want the open flow of health information, I'm just pointing out the practicality of implementing and enforcing the regulation.
John, that was you, right?
It was, in fact, John.
Okay, thanks. John, just, you know, help me if you can. I'm just kind of thinking this through. Your point is valid. Don't you think electronically and digitally, I don't know, I've for decades, you know, and throughout their act and course of doing business, that is, they already have the invested systems that electronically and datally keep track of, I think I just made up a new word, datally, that digitally keep track of, that's their cost of doing business, and they've already have it built in through the system, and that they are indeed players in the system, and it's already digitally baked in, and it's a matter of just being broadly part of this system.
So let me offer what I believe is actually a fairly simplistic example. There's a physician practice who's clearly an actor, and they have financial data in one system for billing and accounting, and clinical data in another system for patient care. And the definition of access and EPHI combine that they have to provide data from both systems included in a cohesive way in response to inquiries, and they have to be able to do that via API. So somehow they've got a provider of their EHR that has written an API. They've got a provider of their accounting system that's presumably written a completely different API, and they somehow need to unify a data response from those two different systems with two different vendors from two different APIs, and they're a physician practice that has no IT department.
They can still provide to the patient the information. though, you know, it's both digitally available and, you know, we're moving to the place where they can provide it to the patient, the information. Even if they need to print it.
But if they can't do what I just described, it seems to me anyone can accuse them of information blocking.
And if they can, you know, if they can provide the open, I mean, I just can see that these systems be encouraged to be able to provide. You could provide on both sides of that equation.
Mark, would any of the exceptions kick in here? Would we be looking at a reasonable and non-discriminatory, or wouldn't there be something that would kick in? Because I hear what John's saying, and I do, especially being in rural Mississippi and dealing with people that have very rudimentary digital health, electronic health information systems, EHRs, EMRs. Some really don't have much of anything. They certainly don't have an IT department. They're in a practice by themselves. What mechanism is there to protect those providers who are there trying to deliver care to their patients, trying to make sure they have what they need, but certainly don't have the ability or resources to deliver APIs and all these different pieces that we're discussing?
Sure, yeah. And so the scenario, just so I'm clear, is a situation where an entity would like to, you know, act in the right way but doesn't have the money or resources or capacity to do so. Is that generally the scenario we're talking about?
John, tell me if I'm hearing that. Certainly, mayor that I run.
I think that's right. It's money. It's sophistication. It's all of the above are going to be barriers to complying with this reg if we overreach.
Yeah. So I got to be careful because I can't really provide analysis, but I will say that, you know, I think someone in that situation might look to the infeasibility exception, which talks about relative burden to the person or the entity requesting the information versus the entity that would be providing the information. And we provide a list of factors that you would look at to determine the relative burden on those actors. And it also talks about if an actor is unable or it's such a financial burden or they just don't have the capacity to do so. We say that you would need that's okay if you show that based on all the conditions in the exception, but you would also need to work with the person or entity requesting the information to provide a reasonable alternative means of accessing the relevant information.
Yes, and Mark, to your point on that, you know, so you have this exception basis. However, the reasonable alternative can be in print copy and timely and real-time request to the patient to the best of their abilities on those small practice type of exception. But we also see so much today and so many systems, the care providers actually can provide their, whether it's their primary or their pediatrician, I'm just looking at a system right now in front of me that's my assistant's pediatric practice, which is non-hospital affiliated. It has health, it has visits, it has messaging, it has billing, it has the entire profile. So, you know, I think there are provisions, and I think we need to move into this new age. And I think these rules are really trying to get us there.
And this is Michael. I don't think anybody's against moving into the future for sure, into where most people are right now, but there is a large portion of the country that doesn't have the resources. So as long as there's exceptions there to meet there, I don't think that any of those practices are information blocking or trying to keep their patients from having what they need. I know a lot of these practices personally, and you know, they can certainly print things out and do things. I just want to make sure that there's some exception there and that we don't overreach. The second part that I was curious about is, I'm thinking this was one of the work groups I had to miss, but we have a proposed recommendation in this section concerning actors. Is that something that we're still wanting to move forward with, or are we wanting to change that and try to define all these people under a different group now? I don't know if everybody can see the Google Doc, but it we do have proposed wording for a proposed recommendation from this work group concerning parties.
And I think that might have been, I think Andy might have started working on that, so he might want to weigh in once he joins. But if others have thoughts, feel free.
John, is that something you have access to, or do you want us to read it?
I don't have access to it at the moment.
All right. Mark, do you want to read it, or do you want me to?
Sure, I can read it. So basically, I'm not sure if you know, I can't speak to Andy whether he still feels this way, but it says the work group recommends that the definition of actors be augmented to include a functional component followed by illustration of common names for those actors. Proposed wording, actors regulated by the information blocking provision include all those organizations and individuals who create, store, curate, or otherwise process electronic health information about a patient as an individual or in aggregate. Such organizations and individuals may include healthcare providers, healthcare insurers, health IT developers, health information exchanges, and health information networks.
I find nothing unreasonable about that statement.
And Mark, I added in the comment above that, you know, we could also include the middle players that would engage in, you know, kind of outline the that it's not limited to, but the players that benefit financially to that patient transaction, that would include, you know, the pharmacy benefit managers, pharmacies group purchasing organizations, technology companies, IT developers, laboratories, medical device suppliers, brokers, and other similar middle market players that have financial interest in the healthcare supply chain.
And I see that comment. I think that's great. I guess all I would kind of try to drill down just a little bit more, because I guess I probably sound like a broken record. But so within Cures, like, you know, Congress said that developers, providers, networks, and exchanges are the groups that are going to be regulated. So, and those are, we just, I think in our rule, we developed the term actors to refer to those four categories of people or entities. So if the recommendation, like Cynthia put here, is, you know, to keep very broad actors, I would just, again, these are your recommendations, I would maybe nudge you in the direction of actually addressing each of those four actors, namely exchanges, networks, providers, and developers, and say how we would, you suggest we change those definitions, because that's kind of the construct that we're working under. Just saying that actors should be broader, I'm not sure how we would reasonably make those changes based on Congress's construct.
So if I hear you right, Mark, ONC is recommending that we broaden the definitions, but we broaden them under the four defined actors that are already defined for us, that we go ahead and broaden that under each one of those individuals. We try to fit these people that Cynthia and others are talking about into those definitions, or make sure that they fit in those definitions clearly.
It's essentially, yes, but just since this is being recorded, ONC is not recommending any action by this group, nor am I, so I just want to be clear. All I'm saying is that I think everything you all are saying is really reasonable, and it's well thought out. I would just direct you to add those comments to the definitions of and preamble discussion of networks, exchanges, providers, and developers as necessary, in your opinion. Because this category of actors, I think it was something that Andy wanted to add, but the scope of what we call actors isn't really in question, because like I said, that's from Cures. They're the four actors that Congress laid out. It's more that we tried to ensure that our definitions of those actors struck the right balance of entities that would be covered. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes. It does to me. So if unless somebody else has something to add to this, I think that we can wait for Andy to come and speak to his point about actors, if that was all written from him. I assume, since it didn't have an AT by it, that was something that was discussed in the group. So I guess we need to go and try to work on our recommendations under these other definitions then.
Yes, I hear the same. Thank you. Mark, okay. Could you just flag that we do that in the subsequent meetings then?
Sure. Yes, I can do that. So would you all like to start from the top, Michael?
Yes.
Or what are you thinking?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I was. You'll go ahead. That's the end of the. That's the bottom of the Google Doc. Let's work back up from the top down and work through our recommendations so that we can start the discussions on and revisions of, so that we can get as far as we can before we run out of time today.
So I guess the first one up here is electronic health information, but it sounds to me maybe you all want to go to health information network and exchange definition, because it sounds like that's what you're honing in on with the payer and plan discussion. Is that right?
Well, I think we went through, did we have a recommendation on, didn't we come up with a recommendation yesterday on EHI or whenever, they're all running together, so whenever we had the last work group meeting?
Yeah, and I added a comment under
I just pulled it up, Cynthia, on the screen now.
Okay, great. Thanks.
So, Mark, it might help if you, because I know John's in transit, it might help if you would, do you mind reading through that?
Sure. So just for clarity, right now, John, below the line items that we have regarding the definition of electronic health information, I'm not sure if this right here that I'm highlighting, I'm not sure who pulled that down. That might just be repeating the text.
Right.
I might just delete that. Do you want that? Just looks like it's
it looks
number
like
two in the in the definition.
Is that the actual definition? I think it was just putting the definition above it so we could look at it at the same time, close by. I think that's what the reason why it was there. So you could
I'll
see the comments on the definition on the same page.
Oh, yeah. No, that's helpful. I'm just going to put current text there for clarity. All right. So we have one proposed recommendation, and we talked quite a bit about this yesterday, is to add text in preamble that clarifies that information is inclusive of human or machine-readable forms. And I believe everyone was on board with that, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great. So the next one is an addition from that Cynthia added to the definition of EHI. So right now, I'll kind of explain the changes she made. It says, suggest we update the definition of EHI to... The first change is, so there's one and two in the definition that say electronic protected health information and any other information, blah, blah, blah. But Cynthia has added a three to be any other information that relates to the past, present, or future payment for the provision of health care to an individual. So it looks like, Cynthia, correct me if I'm wrong, you kind of pulled out the last clause in two and moved it to three. I guess so that it's clearer. Is that right?
We just made it clear that it's any other information. You that it can be still, it's still part of it. It's just that it's any other information that relates to it. So there, you know, like Andy's concern was machine readable and human form, that, you know, is any other information that. We're just sort of reiterating that. that it's both.
This is John, and I'm not sure I'm engaged in enough to follow the on the very first call we debated the inclusion of pricing information in the definition of EPHI. Is this group recommending absolutely yes? Because if so, I'd like to add the asterisk that the implications of complying, the implications of including that data in the national cost of complying is going to be significant.
I had trouble. I'm so sorry. I had trouble hearing. Could you just clarify the?
Yeah, I could probably say it better. I'm sorry, you're talking to me or to Mark?
I think it's to you, John. She just wants you to restate what you said.
Yeah, so on the first call, we debated, we were asked to debate whether pricing information should be included in the definition of electronic prescription health information. And it sounds like there's a comment in the document, I guess I'm asking, that says, yes, absolutely it is, which I'm a little nervous about. But I'm just, so if that's where we're coming down, I would like to add the observation that including that information in the definition of what has to be made accessible in all circumstances to avoid information blocking, that there's a recognition that the national cost and complexity of complying with the regulation is driven up by that inclusion.
Go ahead, Cynthia.
I think you really have to look at this. Is Mark pointed out to us that this has been promulgated as rule since 2000 and law since 96 is part of the health information definition.
In HIPAA, which is an entirely different regulation, which was designed to define a category of information that should only ever be shared under certain circumstances. So now we have a regulation that is defining the times where only rarely should the information not be shared. So I think employing the same definition for both regulations is unquestionably going to have unintended consequences.
Well, I think the consequences ultimately will be that patients that are getting surprise billings for surgery from a physician fee of $101,000 that appear to be within their network, and they check that it's within their network and it's advertised within their network, and they get more than four times three times the average income of the American worker for a two-hour surgery, that would in-network be a $2,500 fee to the surgeon. And when surgeons and medical practitioners are charging whatever they want and the patient has no negotiating leverage, the opportunity we have at hand is to honor what HIPAA, through the Portability Act, defined as health information. And that is in law. And it will ultimately allow consumers and our patients not to have surprise, egregious price gouging and overcharge that is bringing them to financial ruin. And
so, Cynthia, I acknowledge that. I'm sorry, finish your point.
I understand that showing prices in any other market whether it be grocery or retail or all other functional markets, we are at a moment in time where we can honor the HIPAA definition and we can deliver to patients and employers visibility and to see the clear and real prices of healthcare and be able to shop. And without us doing our job and putting up roadblocks, I am sorry, I believe by not honoring the HIPAA definition that we are then, in fact, information blocking. We are, in fact,
can I get in a point?
The consumer to know the price.
Can I jump in here? So I absolutely acknowledge that the situation that you describe sometimes happens. I've personally experienced it. What I'm suggesting is that if we write a regulation that increases 0.5%, 1%, 1.5% to the total cost of healthcare nationally, we'll just bankrupt the country faster with certainty.
Well, I disagree with you, John. I disagree with you because we see competitive market forces work in other industries that I know that it can be fair and equitable in pricing. So why should an oligopoly hospital system be able to charge someone 11 times the Medicare rate by not allowing a patient to see price when they could have gone to another clinic across the street and gotten the same lab test for a matching Medicare rate?
I completely agree with you that that is the desired future state. And maybe if the regulation ultimately has a compliance timeline and a stepwise process that is reasonable, then we can both be comfortable. What I don't hear any discussion of, or very little discussion of at the work group level or the task force level, is extrapolating the complexity and cost of implementing this regulation nationwide. And therefore, I feel a responsibility to keep bringing that up.
Oh, John, I feel a responsibility because, look, I speak as a business owner. I speak as someone who has self-insured plans for 1,000 employees. I speak as someone who's worn a hat in various different businesses. Guess what? Showing your prices is the cost of doing business.
So, sure.
So we obviously have, I wouldn't say differing viewpoints, but differing viewpoints. We have things that we need to note on both of those. We did discuss on the last call and discussed some on the task force about payment being included in the definition of EHI and what is EHI. I think that we had kind of come to agreement on that last time. We also had a pretty long discussion about the fact that there'd have to be a lot of regulations put in place that have to be, and Mark, you can correct me on this. We discussed last time about a regulation having to be written around this, that there'd have to be a lot of details that it wasn't going to all be covered under this particular piece of regulation.
Yeah, so I think that's all great conversation. I think that's right. So we do have the request for information for price information kind of split out. And I think that's probably the next conversation to have potentially. But just so I get some clarity from Cynthia on the suggested change to electronic health information, it seems like I guess I'm just confused. Is it just pulling out, Cynthia? Because in the current text, you know, the definition we say, or the past, present, or future payment for the provision of health care to an individual. So I think you just kind of pulled that out and made it a number three. Just so it's more central, is that right? I'm just trying to understand the change.
Well, I think I can stand as, but it's like any information that relates to that payment. So maybe it's just a reiteration of it. We just want to make sure that it's broad enough that the pricing still stands. And you know, what I could, we want to leave it in there that it is and the, you know, if the patient requests it, or not even if the patient requests it, and they should be provided the past, present, and future payment of the provision of health care.
Got it.
I think it's there, it's, and any other information that relates to it. But you know what? You know, I think it stands strong as is. It is part of HIPAA. It's part of since 96. You know, it's been law.
Okay, yeah, I was just going to see if that's a suggest, like a recommendation that we want to kind of see other, if others are on board with it, which would be great. And I don't know, Michael, how do you want to proceed with that one? Do you want to, or Cynthia?
No, Michael, I'm sorry. There's a touch of a delay, so I don't mean to interrupt. No, I don't understand how it's already stated in the definition that the payment's in there, and it speaks pretty clearly. I didn't know if we have the proposed recommendation that we're in the preamble about what information is, aren't we already covered in the definition in the current text? Do we need to add this, or is it just, I don't want to say it seems, I mean, it's already there.
I think we can keep it. I just think that, you know, hang on, just let me collect my thoughts for 1 second.
And while you do, Cynthia, I might just suggest that if and I'm not trying to push you one way or the other, if you feel like the current definition is good, you could also make a recommendation to add preamble language to explain kind of the things that you're saying, potentially, without changing the definition.
Okay, I think, Mark, in a preamble, I think another concern would be, so we can leave the definition as is, but I think, you know, the other concern is just, you know, getting at pricing, you know, where any information, where it goes into the electronic health record of identifying the individual with respect to where the individual is reasonable basis to believe the information can be used to identify the individual. You know, that long phraseology, you know, if you look at the broader definition in HIPAA, it doesn't have, there are two levels of HIPAA where all of the nuance of that individual is in more in the protectionism side, and then the broader definition is to provide the individual with their health information as a provision of care to the individual. And broad enough that the concern is that obviously when the individual looks at pricing that they can actually get access to that and have that be applied system wide and through the open API abilities.
Okay, so the suggestion, we have proposed recommendations. We're going to leave the definition the way it is. We're going to add text in the preamble that we've already discussed earlier about information is inclusive of human and machine readable forms. And then, Cynthia, it might be best if under this recommendation, if you've got some time to write down what kind of put in the thoughts so the Mark doesn't try to have to interpret your words, if you could put those under a proposed recommendation to go into the preamble as well. I think that makes a lot of sense. I certainly hear the points that you're trying to cover. I do agree that it needs to be somewhere. I think that in the preamble maybe the best place for it, because I think the definition is clear.
Thank you. I will do so.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Mark, I'm sorry, you're typing. If we can scroll and start looking at the rest of the recommendations or any other recommendations we want.
Yeah, give me 1 second. Just adding a note for...
Absolutely.
All All right. There's a weird delay on this Google Doc. I look like I'm a special typer here, but sorry about that. Okay, so I think that's great. And Cynthia, please just go in there on your time, and I think let us know what the proposed recommendation would be there. I think the big ones we have left then moving on are to kind of circle back on the conversation you all are having now with pricing information, and to circle back on the definition of health information network and exchange, which we were talking about earlier. So pick of the two doors, what are you picking? Where do you want to go first?
Honestly, this is Michael. I think that for the pricing discussion, I mean, we can certainly have some of that discussion now. I think that's one, as we talk tomorrow in the large task force meeting, I think that's another one of those big rocks, as Andy likes to say, that we need to pick up again and discuss in there, just to let the group know where we're going, the task force. But certainly welcome to any more discussion there. I think that from what I understand the points, yes, we have this opportunity to address pricing and pricing transparency. We also need to make sure that we understand fully the consequences, both intended and unintended. I think some of the ones that Cynthia mentioned, of a patient being able to have better information to make decisions and not be surprised, I think honestly that would be an intended consequence. I think an unintended consequence is that it's going to cost a lot of money and take a lot of time and effort to be able to get to this point. Not saying that it should or it shouldn't, but that it will. So I think that we've heard all those points. I don't know that anybody has any different points to add. I think that I won't say that we've exhausted that discussion, but I think that we've had a lot of very intelligent discussion around that matter and have covered points from all different sides. But certainly welcome to open that up for a little bit. I do think that we could spend some time on electronic health exchanges and networks. I think we could work there. Might actually lead to recommendations.
Yeah, I just agree to disagree, on some of these points. But, like these systems are pricing and payment systems are very well sophisticated and built. And opening up the kimono to be able to just have price discovery, real price discovery, is very doable and is done in every other industry as a norm of cost of doing business. And if you look at the actors in the system and you look at the profitability, just look over the past 10 years versus the burden to the patient, you can see the inverse relationship. And I think it's already baked in and it's doable and it's cost of doing business and it's almost insulting in any other sector. Prices are known and posted and digitally available in, the Amazon world, the Google world, the Uber world in which we live. So this is, I disagree with you, and I believe that's the role of the enterprise to disclose. Thank you.
Okay, so Mark, what area is this that you have identified there? Is this about the pricing information?
Yeah. So what I have right now, so it sounds like maybe we'll hold on the pricing conversation and try to move on to get some more clarity on health information networks and exchange. But to Cynthia's point and to others, so what I have right now, I just made a note when we spoke last that I think everyone seemed to agree that the proposed definition of EHI should be read to include price information. But I would ask, is that accurate to everyone on the phone right now, that the definition of EHI should be read to include price information?
I think I'm the minority on that one, but I'm not going to make a fuss. I'm not saying it shouldn't. I'm saying we seem to be silent on the implications.
Yeah, so actually, John, it's a really good point. So there's the issue of whether the definition should be read to include it, which, there's the payment part of the definition. But also what I was getting at is we have this request for information where we want more detail about the scope and parameters of price information that would be included and the implications of such information in the definition. That's what we're really looking at, getting more information from you all and the general public about. So, John, your thoughts on that, if you want to put them down on paper or whatever, I think that would be really helpful, and Cynthia as well, to get both sides on that one.
Yep. And I think one of the things that Andy mentioned yesterday was, you know, one of the recommendations could very well be to create a task force to look at this. That, you know, this is, we're tasked with looking at multiple different definitions as a part of one work group of a larger task force. Does this need to be in a, need to be discussed? Because there is a lot of detail to discuss under this, under the pricing language.
Okay, just making a note real quick about John's point. Sorry, I want to make sure I'm conveying it right. John, basically what you're saying is you're concerned about the unintended consequences and the scope of what price information could be included if it's included in the definition of EHI. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that we need to look at the implications. It's not a question of including it in the definition or not. It's a question of also considering the cost of complying, the complexity.
Okay, I'm writing it down, but feel free to go in there and delete what I wrote or update it however you want. I just said that you're concerned about the unintended consequences and complexity and cost of complying. Okay, great. So, Michael, do you want to try to move to the Health Information Network and Exchange definition now?
Yes, please. So we have the definition there, but didn't we make some recommendations below, or did we not?
Yeah, I'll scroll down. Here's all the conversation. And I can, since John's on the phone, I can recap what we have right now. So right now, we have a proposed recommendation that the definitions for HIE and HIN are currently unclear. For example, an RHIO may well fall under the definition of a HIN within this meaning, yet they are specifically drawn out as an HIE. So I guess just reading that, my comment is, I'm not sure what we mean by drawn out, but again, they're not mutually exclusive. So you could be an HIN and an HIE. So I'm not sure I totally understand that recommendation.
So if I could, and I didn't write that, I'm not trying to interpret it for you. The definition as written seems so broad and inclusive as to almost lose their meaning. If every, as we discussed on an earlier call, if every provider also meets the definition of a health information exchange, I guess if that's the intent, as we discussed earlier, there's not a desire to leave out key organizations that represent a key part of the healthcare supply chain. That may not be a problem, but I find it very, the definitions are very broad, and if every provider is also a health information exchange, I'm not sure what the purpose of the definition, what purpose they serve.
Gotcha. Do others have thoughts on that? Because I'm looking at the proposed recommendations, and it looks like it's just a lot of original text copied in there. I don't see many recommendations, actually. So,
if I were to offer a recommendation, it would be what we discussed earlier, and that would be to offer examples of organizations that fit each definition and examples of organizations that do not fit any definition.
And this is Cynthia, and I think what we said earlier was to broadly cover the platform for today in the network and exchange on the financial
food chain or the supply chain of transactions of actors that exchange patient health information, electronic health information over through exchange and over networks. And John, I don't know, maybe Mark can clarify, but maybe a provider that's held separately outside of the network and exchange definition is that small rural Mississippi physician practice that has the exception, and they're under a provider definition, and so they are looked at to provide real time in the best way they can for their patients.
Yeah, and just a point of clarity is that I guess the way the definitions work, I would ask John if you think the definition of HIE or HIN encompasses all providers, I guess I would ask to because that's not the way I'm reading it, but like I would ask that you provide kind of more detail about the issue there. But I would say that we do the definition of HIN and HIE, like I said before, is functional. So there could very well, and we have an example in the preamble where we explain that a provider could be considered an HIN or an HIE if they act in that capacity under those definitions. So that's just my point of clarity right there.
Yeah, and so Mark, I also see it that, you know, well, you know, why wouldn't a provider who has electronic health records, you know, that they are transferring that information, that they are part of, they are defined as a network or an exchange. So it does include those providers. And it is all inclusive of the payer and the provider and all those actors that share that patient information in the food chain, in supply chain. So I think we want to broaden it because they are part of that. The providers are part of that. And I think what would be more helpful is also to say where is a carve out where the provider is thought of separately, but they, you know, where to me, I thought the only change for a provider was with the penalties and for violation under the Inspector General, whereas, you know, there's up to $1 million per occurrence for all other players. And I guess what I would look at this committee is if even as, and we're not doing it right here, but as we address it, you know, we can look at fairness and say, why wouldn't you have most favored nations like you do, and just allow the same penalty to apply to all actors and all players because it's defined and it's clear. So unless there's a carve out for the individual mental health social worker or therapist or a small rural provider carve out is defined in that first provider bucket, the rest of the world under the provider and payer actors would come under IC in the network and exchange.
Hey, Mark, when you have a chance to circle back, I wanted to ask about one of your comments.
Okay, sure.
I just didn't want to stop on Cindy's point. So you said that, and I'm really trying to figure this out because it would help me tremendously if you could help me understand this. So the way that you read the definition of HIE would exclude providers, and I assumed when I read this the first time that was OMC's intent in crafting it.
Well, no. So let me stop you there. Function. I mean, I'm not saying it would exclude providers because, like I said, a provider could act in that. What we're trying to do, just to break it down, is to provide the function of an HIN or an HIE and not say explicitly who the entities are that would fall within that function.
Okay, let me play this out because I think it's, so a physician practice by definition, is going to have to enable the exchange of electronic health information with its patients or its information blocking, right?
Well, I mean, I mean, just those, these are tricky. So I can't say yes or no because it all depends on the facts or circumstances, whether an exception applies, things like that. But generally,
So basically, every provider is going to have to enable the exchange of health information between or among a class of individuals or entities, i.e., their patients, i.e., their trading partners. I don't want to open up a whole can of worms, but the way that we've defined health information exchanges in other contexts is that that's their primary business. Meaning, if you said an individual or entity, its primary purpose is to enable the access exchange or use of electronic health, I mean, that to me is a better definition of a health information exchange. Now, if that has unintended consequences, frankly, as a health information exchange, selfishly, I think if almost everybody in the healthcare system has to is subject to the same regulation as an HIE, meaning almost every provider, I'm like, fine, that doesn't bother me at all. But when I consider trying to write a narrower definition, that is, in my view, one way to try and fix it, if that's desirable.
Yeah, and John,
yeah, sure. Go ahead, Cindy.
I totally disagree with you on this because I don't think we want to have a narrower definition. I think the intent of Cures Act was to allow for patients to get access and players to be held accountable. And if you narrow the definition, you're narrowing accountability, frankly. And,
can you offer an example of who that would leave out?
Well, to the example of the providers are, you know, functionally, as HHS has defined it so far, we interpret it that that providers are under the functional definition and they should be treated as such, as are plans. If they're functionally acting, they're functionally providing network and exchange. And in the broader sense of the term, they are functionally providing it and should be treated as such.
It's, I would say to ONC, I have no problem with what you just said. My issue is that it's in no one's interest to write a regulation that is confusing for players in the industry to understand which definition they meet and how to comply. We should write a regulation that achieves the desired end with as much precision as possible, that isn't vague, fuzzy, and therefore costing the government and the industry more money to comply with it. So that's where I'm coming from.
And from my side, I agree with everything you said there, and that was our goal and intent. And if we miss the mark, this is the forum to let us know. So I'm not sure, Michael, how you want to try it. It seems like we've got, if I'm hearing it right, John, you kind of take a more narrow view on HINs and HIEs, and Cynthia believes they should be broader and with a lowercase N and E. So,
I think intent is a functional intent, and Mark, I'm not. I thought our role was to look at the actors that play in this interchange, and I thought that was where we were going from the earlier discussion today. I didn't think HHS was weighing in with an opinion yet, so I just thought we were looking for comment.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I apologize. I'm not weighing in. My intent is not to weigh in, so I will be quiet and let you all move forward.
I certainly didn't take it as your intent was to direct the conversation. I think that we're just trying to get to the point of recommendations. And I guess my confusion is around if we're trying to define these four actors, if providers are acting as providers, then they fall under the provider definition. If the actors are providing, if the providers are acting as in an exchange role, then would they not fall under a health information exchange? Is that fair?
And I just want to be clear, because earlier, John, you had mentioned about it being a primary role, and I don't see that anywhere in the regs. I think it's whether they're functionally acting in that capacity. Do we have agreement on that?
I'm not suggesting it's in the regs. I'm trying to provide the function of the task force in giving feedback to ONC to write a good and precise regulation. So I have no problem with broad definitions if broad definitions are what is desired. What I have an issue with is writing a regulation that the industry is going to have trouble interpreting and figuring out how to comply with. So the end of sentence one, let me offer this. Is it possible to offer a recommendation that the regulation be written such that if you meet more than one definition, then pick the one that is most obviously you. If you're a physician practice and you meet the definition of a health information exchange, you're a provider. If you're a health information exchange and you meet the definition of something else, just be a health information exchange. You only have to be covered by the regulation once. And having to consider the implications of meeting more than one definition, I'm not sure it's constructive.
Right.
So the definition of where you fit is based upon the penalties, right? So that's where the definition matters on accountability and penalties.
Well, do we even know the difference yet? We just know that there's going to be a difference. Could be more, could be less, could be this. We don't know. But, I mean, if there's accountability. Right. If there's accountability and we make sure that we have the groups defined, not that we're going to be inclusive of everyone, but if we have a provider group defined and we have a HIE defined and HIN defined and a health information technology company defined, can we put something in the preamble that covers all the different examples of who might fit into what instead of trying to, because there is a difference between, although after reading this definition multiple times and hearing the conversation, I'm confused as to what the difference is now, but there is a difference between an HIE and an HIN, but if you fit into one of them or you fit into both of them, you're still going to be held accountable regardless. If you're, and I'm going back to, I guess I'm kind of repeating John's point, but if you're a provider and you're exchanging information, which is certainly happens every day, as long as people are being held accountable, I guess that's light years ahead of where we are right now. I'm not trying to be funny, but it is. I just think that if we try to include everybody into every definition, we're going to have a bunch of definitions that are basically we only need one. At that point, you get rid of all the actors and anybody that provides any type of health information from, to, around, by, near a patient, you fall under this rule. But I think that it was very clear that we need to have these four different categories of actors. I'm not exactly sure how to do the examples unless we put them in the preamble, but I do think that there are differences between HIEs, HINs, providers, and health information technology companies.
Is that Mark speaking? No, that?
No, that was Michael. I'm sorry.
Michael. Okay. Michael.
Yeah.
Sorry. I got the draw. Sorry, I had a break. So, Michael, good point. And I think just to share with you all, yesterday's call with Andy and our group, we all got confused and entangled in our own underwear trying to figure out the definitions, quite frankly, and we moved it to today because I think it begs on the HIE and HIN for preamble clarity and broad, you know, as we look at the actors, like we just left the form of conversation, is to, you know, at least give examples of and clarity to as we look at this broad definition. And then, you know, I think the other role is to look at accountability, you know. So we know they'll all be accountable. It's just that there is a difference for three of them versus one. And we do not know what that is. So it doesn't mean we can't comment.
Right.
Mark,
I'm sorry, John.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay, real quick. So I think, and I may be stating the obvious, the desired future state on these definitions of actors is that the definitions are not written so narrowly that an organization like a payer can sneak through a loophole of the definition and not be covered by the regulation, but that there isn't any point in having an organization be covered multiple times and be confused, for example, about what penalties under what circumstances. That's all we're trying to achieve, is that everybody who should fit a definition fits it, but nobody's unclear on what definition they fit.
Right. Hey, Mark, can you? Oh, I'm sorry.
I think it's really also that the net is cast wide enough that anybody who is on that supply food chain, a supply chain financially transacting and benefiting from the patient's care, is accountable, right? So that they're all under those buckets of active land.
Right. No, I think we're all in agreement that it needs to be broad enough to capture everybody, but narrow enough that it makes sense to have more than one definition. Mark, there was some proposed language around, or some proposed simple, and to me they were pretty simple changes to HIE. Can you scroll down to those? That we had discussed those yesterday on the call, and I think it might help John just to hear what we changed, because it wasn't a huge change, but it was a change.
Yeah, I'm not sure where it is. Is it this?
We did because we ended it instead of. There we go. Hold on, I'm reading it. Didn't we add processing, handling, or, yeah. So, John, just for your benefit, because I don't think you got to hear the definition yesterday, one of the things that we talked about under, I'll read the potential health information exchange language and then go over what was deleted and what was added, but the proposed language that we put in there was health information exchange, or HIE, means an individual or entity that enables, facilitates, or performs the access, exchange, processing, handling, or other use of electronic health information, period. What we took out, that we added the words facilitates and added the words processing and handling. What we took out was the last sentence that talked to primarily between or among a particular class of individuals or entities for a limited set of purposes, because nowhere could any of us come up with what that primarily particular and limited set of purposes meant. So we kind of narrowed the definition a little bit, but also broadened it to the point where people that it's not just for those folks that enable it, but also the ones that facilitate that enablement or process and handle, not just so that you could be looking at, you know, pharmacy benefit managers and other groups that could potentially fall into this.
Well, I think that the suggested change represents an improvement of clarity. Thank you.
Wonderful. Yes, I do too. And Michael, I think that was really well said. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think that what we should do in that is and I don't know how the group feels about this, but in the preamble, talk about some groups that would potentially fall into HIE, because I know that I don't want to use Cynthia's term, but got caught up in my underwear. I certainly did, because every time I would read it, I would get confused between an HIE the way it's written and an HIM the way it's written. So I think if we could maybe potentially recommend or propose recommendation under that is to add something to the preamble that gives examples. And again, like Cynthia said earlier, that includes but is not, you know, it's not a complete list that we could give examples of. And that could include the pharmacy benefit manager that was doing X, Y, or Z. Or it could include, you know, in potential cases could include providers that aren't, that would be acting in this way primarily, not in the definition that would meet providers. Thoughts on that? Okay. Can we spend some time, not right now, but this evening, maybe tomorrow, looking at potential examples or some language to go into the preamble? I don't want to spend too much time doing that now. I'd really like us to focus on, maybe we can get through HIE, but or, I mean HIN, we just did HIE. If people could, over tonight and tomorrow, put something in there that we think might belong in the preamble, just to make sure that we're including or giving examples of groups that might fall in that might otherwise think that they don't. I think that's helpful.
Yes, I agree. That would help.
Now, Mark, I don't remember exactly, because I had to drop off the call early yesterday, where we got to on HIN. Did we have any proposals on that, or we didn't get to the HIN piece?
Let's see. I don't think we really got into it. Looks like we just have the original there. Yeah, no, nothing proposed.
That's and John, are you aware of the, I mean, I'm sure you're aware of, but you've seen the original definition and how it's written now. I don't remember, I don't remember any discussion around HI other than it talked about, was that the one that talked about affiliated being the primary difference? Mark, I can't see it right now.
Sorry. Yeah, that's unaffiliated. Let me pull up the definition.
And Mark, I literally have, I'm sorry, I literally have it in front of me right now, so.
Beautiful. So if you could provide some thoughts to that, and maybe we can button up that definition or recommendation as well.
Yeah, my feedback is that I have pictures of a dozen highly intelligent ONC people in a conference room for 3 hours working on this definition to come up with all these words, and I'm afraid to move a comma. That said, it seems like a really hard way to describe, I'm not sure, I mean, let me start that over again. Look, when I think Health Information Network, I'm assuming that we're trying to define some of the primary things that exist in this country that people think of as health information networks. E-Health Exchange, Commonwealth, perhaps Epic's Care Everywhere capabilities, perhaps et cetera, et cetera. And this seems a lot of words to get at that if that's the intent.
It is a little wordy. This is Michael again. Do you have some recommendations on what we think could be changed to meet what, I guess, what people think of as a health information network now, but also that would be, that would still contain broad enough language that if someone was acting in that way, that we would be able to identify them without all the words?
I don't suppose it's fair to ask Mark what, when this definition was being crafted, if there were examples of organizations outside those that I mentioned that are supposed to meet this definition? Is that, yes or no, that's an unfair question, Mark.
Well, what I would say is that we definitely thought through the implications of these definitions and tried to strike the right balance. I would really just refer you to preamble. We're running short on time, so I'd say maybe before the next call where we discuss this, for everyone to read over the preamble and just kind of get an idea of where we were coming from. But as always, recommendations are welcomed here for improvement.
Yeah, I guess that's fair, and I'm just latching onto things like influences policies or agreements and influences technology or service. That seems crazy broad, but I will revisit the preamble. Thanks.
Would that be helpful?
Sorry to interrupt. Is that counting the number of lobbyists? Sorry, that's a joke. Sorry.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Can we break in for public comment real quick, and then you guys could jump back in?
Yeah, I was. I knew we still had about a minute. That's one of the things I was going to ask before we break into public comment. If John and Cynthia, and I'll certainly take a look at it as well, if we could make some recommendations on the definition of HIN, that'd be very helpful just before our next call, and then we'll break right since it's time for public comment.
Is okay. The preamble page reference for HIN handy?
Yeah, it's on that whole conversation is about around 339 to 344.
Mark, if you could put that in the just in the comments there so we can.
Yeah, it's in the document right here, right there, page
number. We're looking at the slide.
Yep.
Operator, can you open the line for public comment, please?
Yes, if you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Do we have any calls, public comment line?
There are no public comments in the queue at this time.
Okay, thank you. Michael, we could jump back in.
Certainly. Mark, could you pull the... You're ahead of me every step of the way. So that's our homework, is to look at the HIN for actual recommendations for the definition there, but also to look at what language we think should be added to the preamble for HIE. What's our next, what do we have below that, since we know what our homework is there?
I mean, I think the big ones, you know, are other comments on EHI. The price information is still definitely out there. And, you know, like you said, refining the HIN issue. There's also the actors and practices, but it sounds like maybe we've covered those.
Yeah, I think that we've covered the practices for sure. I think the actors, since CURES has defined what the four actors are, we just need to make sure, I'm assuming in the preamble, one, that the reg text covers, you know, the groups in broad enough terms that we are able to cover those groups, but in the preamble that we write out what those, which area those groups would fall into, or what we think that those groups would fall into, whether back to Cynthia's term around pharmacy benefit managers and all the others that work along the healthcare continuum, either delivering care, delivering information, delivering product, whatever it might be, that we make sure that we fit those folks in those categories so that we have a clear, while we won't put it all in the reg text, we have a clear examples in the preamble so that no one slips through the cracks of fitting into one of the categories. Is that pretty much what the group thinks?
Yes.
Yes, I think your request is the right way to go. Yeah.
All right. Well, perfect. Well, that was good. I think we all have work to go do. I don't think that I don't know that we can cover anything else during the meeting that's going to be able to clarify any of this, other than to while we're not writing or while we're not working on other things this afternoon, to go in and not only give some thought to it, but also put those thoughts down in writing in the Google Doc so that we can look at those, so that we can be ready for the bigger task force meeting tomorrow, and so that we can have some recommendations for Mark as we move closer and closer to the in-person meeting and us being able to report out on this. I know that there's been lots of discussion today. I certainly appreciate it. I've learned a lot. I appreciate the respect that we all give each other when we have differing viewpoints. I think that's very important that we all are able to voice our viewpoints and also respect that of others. So I personally thank each and every one of you. I know this has taken a lot of time. I know that I may have been a little confused in some of these because we have multiple task force every day, and I can't remember which one's which and who's in which one. So I appreciate everybody's patience as we're working through this, and certainly everyone's hard work. I'm not opposed, unless anybody has anything they want to add for this specific call, I'm not opposed to ending a few minutes early so that we can give that time back and spend that time potentially writing documents.
Nope, much appreciated, and
thank you,
it's a privilege to be part of this process.
Likewise, and thank you, Michael, for leading the call today so well. Thank you.
Thank y'all. And, Mark, I guess that'll be the end of the call unless there's a public comment that's popped up since we last asked.
No, we're good to go, everybody.
Okay,
right.
Well,
thanks,
we'll
everyone.
Talk to you tomorrow for a task force call.
Thank you.
All right, sounds good. Thank you. Bye.